Chapter 21. At first there were only 9 of them adventurous sparks. Then, just a day or two before the sailing date, he turned up. Heard of it somehow, somewhere I would say from some woman, if I didn't know him as I do. He would give any woman a 10-mile berth. He can't stand them. Or maybe in a flesh bar. Or maybe in one of them grand clubs in Pall Mall. Anyway, the agent netted him in all right cash down, and only about 4 and 20 hours for him to get ready, but he didn't miss his ship. Not he. You might have called it a pierhead jump for a gentleman. I saw him come along. Know the West India docks, eh? Schomburg did not know the West India docks. Ricardo looked at him pensively for a while, and then continued, as if such ignorance had to be disregarded. Our tug was already alongside. 2 loafers were carrying his dunnage behind him. I told the dockman at our moorings to keep all fast for a minute. The gangway was down already, but he made nothing of it. Up he jumps, 1 leap, swings his long legs over the rail, and there he is on board. They pass up his swell dunnage, and he puts his hand in his trousers pocket, and throws all his small change on the wharf for them chaps to pick up. They were still promenading that wharf on all fours when we cast off. It was only then that he looked at me quietly, you know, in a slow way. He wasn't so thin then as he is now, but I noticed he wasn't so young as he looked, not by a long chalk. He seemed to touch me inside somewhere. I went away pretty quick from there. I was wanted forward anyhow. I wasn't frightened. What should I be frightened for? I only felt touched on the very spot. But gee miney, if anybody had told me we should be partners before the year was out, well, I would have. He swore a variety of strange oaths, some common, others quaintly horrible to Schomburg's ears, and all mere innocent exclamations of wonder at the shifts and changes of human fortune. Schomburg moved slightly in his chair, but the admirer and partner of Lane Mr. Jones seemed to have forgotten Schomburg's existence for the moment. The stream of ingenuous blasphemy, some of it in bad Spanish, had run dry, and Martin Ricardo, connoisseur and gentleman, sat dumb with a stony gaze, as if still marveling inwardly at the amazing elections, conjunctions, and associations of events which influence man's pilgrimage on this earth. At last Schomburg spoke tentatively. And so the gentleman, up there, talked you over into leaving a good berth? Ricardo started. Talked me over. Didn't need to talk me over. Just beckoned to me, and that was enough. By that time we were in the Gulf of Mexico. One night we were lying at anchor, close to a dry sandbank to this day I am not sure where it was, off the Colombian coast or thereabouts. We were to start digging the next morning, and all hands had turned in early, expecting a hard day with the shovels. Up he comes, and in his quiet, tired way of speaking you can tell a gentleman by that as much as by anything else, almost up he comes behind me and says, just like that, into my ear, in a manner, "Well, what do you think of our treasure hunt now?" ... I didn't even turn my head. Exactly as I stood, I remained, and I spoke, no louder than himself. "If you want to know, sir, it's nothing but just damn tomfoolery." ... We had, of course, been having short talks together at one time or another during the passage. I dare say he had read me like a book. There ain't much to me, except that I have never been tame, even when walking the pavement and cracking jokes, and standing drinks to chums, eh, and to strangers too. I would watch them lifting their elbows at my expense, or splitting their side at my fun. I can be funny when I like, you bet. A pause for self-complacent contemplation of his own fun and generosity checked the flow of Ricardo's speech. Schomburg was concerned to keep within bounds the enlargement of his eyes, which he seemed to feel growing bigger in his head. "Yes, yes," he whispered hastily. "I would watch them and think. You boys don't know who I am. If you did." ... With girls too. Once I was courting a girl. I used to kiss her behind the ear and say to myself, if you only knew who's kissing you, my dear, you would scream and bolt. Apostrophe apostrophe ha. Ha. Not that I wanted to do them any harm, but I felt the power in myself. Now, here we sit, friendly-like, and that's all right. You aren't in my way. But I am not friendly to you. I just don't care. Some men do say that, but I really don't. You are no more to me one way or another than that fly there. Just so. I'd squash you or leave you alone. I don't care what I do. If real force of character consists in overcoming our sudden weaknesses, Schomburg displayed plenty of that quality. At the mention of the fly, he reinforced the severe dignity of his attitude as one inflates a collapsing toy balloon with a great effort of breath. The easygoing, relaxed attitude of Ricardo was really appalling. That's so, he went on. I'm that sort of fellow. You wouldn't think it, would you? No. You have to be told. So I am telling you, and I dare say you only half believe it. But you can't say to yourself that I am drunk, stare at me as you may. I haven't had anything stronger than a glass of iced water all day. Takes a real gentleman to see through a fellow. Oh, yes, he spotted me. I told you we had a few talks at sea about one thing or another. And I used to watch him down the skylight, playing cards in the cuddy with the others. They had to pass the time away somehow. By the same token, he caught me at it once, and it was then that I told him I was fond of cards, and generally lucky in gambling too. Yes, he had sized me up. Why not? A gentleman's just like any other man and something more. It flashed through Schomburg's mind that these two were indeed well matched in their enormous dissimilarity, identical souls in different disguises. Says he to me, Ricardo started again in a gossiping manner, I'm packed up. It's about time to go, Martin. Apostrophe, it was the first time he called me Martin. Says I. Is that it, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, you didn't think I was after that sort of treasure, did you? I wanted to clear out from home quietly. It's a pretty expensive way of getting a passage across, but it has served my turn. Apostrophe apostrophe, I let him know very soon that I was game for anything, from pitch and toss to willful murder, in his company. Willful murder? Apostrophe apostrophe, says he in his quiet way. What the deuce is that? What are you talking about? People do get killed sometimes, when they get in one's way, but that's self-defense, you understand? Apostrophe apostrophe, I told him I did. And then I said I would run below for a minute, to ram a few of my things into a sailor's bag I had. I've never cared for a lot of dunnage. I believed in going about flying light when I was at sea. I came back, and found him strolling up and down the deck, as if he were taking a breath of fresh air before turning in, like any other evening. Ready? Apostrophe apostrophe, yes, sir. Apostrophe apostrophe, he didn't even look at me. We had had a boat in the water astern ever since we came to anchor in the afternoon. He throws the stump of his cigar overboard. Can you get the captain out on deck? Apostrophe apostrophe, he asks. That was the last thing in the world I should have thought of doing. I lost my tongue for a moment. I can try, apostrophe says I. Well then, I am going below. You get him up, and keep him with you till I come back on deck. Mind. Don't let him go below till I return. Apostrophe apostrophe, I could not help asking why he told me to rouse a sleeping man, when we wanted everybody on board to sleep sweetly till we got clear of the schooner. He laughs a little, and says that I didn't see all the bearings of this business. Mind, apostrophe, he says, don't let him leave you till you see me come up again. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he puts his eyes close to mine. Keep him with you at all costs. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and that means? Apostrophe, apostrophe, says I, all costs to him by every possible or impossible means. I don't want to be interrupted in my business down below. He would give me lots of trouble. I take you with me to save myself trouble in various circumstances. And you've got to enter on your work right away. Apostrophe, apostrophe, just so, sir, apostrophe, says I, and he slips down the companion. With a gentleman you know at once where you are, but it was a ticklish job. The skipper was nothing to me one way or another, any more than you are at this moment, Mr. Schomburg. You may light your cigar or blow your brains out this minute, and I don't care a hang what you do, both or neither. To bring the skipper up was easy enough. I had only to stamp on the deck a few times over his head. I stamped hard. But how to keep him up when he got there? Anything the matter, Mr. Ricardo? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I heard his voice behind me. There he was, and I hadn't thought of anything to say to him, so I didn't turn round. The moonlight was brighter than many a day I could remember in the North Sea. Why did you call me? What are you staring at out there, Mr. Ricardo? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he was deceived by my keeping my back to him. I wasn't staring at anything, but his mistake gave me a notion. I am staring at something that looks like a canoe over there, apostrophe, I said very slowly. The skipper got concerned at once. It wasn't any danger from the inhabitants, whoever they were. Oh, hang it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, says he. That's very unfortunate. Apostrophe, he had hoped that the schooner being on the coast would not get known so very soon. Dashed awkward, with the business we've got in hand, to have a lot of niggers watching operations. But are you certain this is a canoe? Apostrophe, apostrophe, it may be a drift log, apostrophe, I said. But I thought you had better have a look with your own eyes. You may make it out better than I can. Apostrophe, his eyes weren't anything as good as mine. But he says, certainly, certainly, you did quite right. Apostrophe, and it's a fact I had seen some drift logs at sunset. I saw what they were then, and didn't trouble my head about them, forgot all about it till that very moment. Nothing strange in seeing drift logs off a coast like that, and I'm hanged if the skipper didn't make one out in the wake of the moon. Strange what a little thing a man's life hangs on sometimes, a single word. Here you are, sitting unsuspicious before me, and you may let out something unbeckoning to you that would settle your hash. Not that I have any ill feeling. I have no feelings. If the skipper had said, oh, bosh, apostrophe, and had turned his back on me, he would not have gone three steps towards his bed. But he stood there and stared. And now the job was to get him off the deck, when he was no longer wanted there. We are just trying to make out if that object there is a canoe or a log, apostrophe, says he to Mr. Jones. Mr. Jones had come up, lounging as carelessly as when he went below, while the skipper was jawing about boats and drifting logs. I asked by signs, from behind, if I hadn't better knock him on the head and drop him quietly overboard. The night was slipping by, and we had to go. It couldn't be put off till next night no more. No. No more. And do you know why? Schomburg made a slight negative sign with his head. This direct appeal annoyed him, jarred on the induced quietude of a great talker forced into the part of a listener, and sunk in it as a man sinks into slumber. Mr. Ricardo struck a note of scorn. Don't know why? Can't you guess? No. Because the boss had got hold of the skipper's cash box by then. See? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.